90% of the UK manufacturers have, started, reshoring their activities. And I think there is a real drive, and I think it's, I think that every country wants to own back those manufacturing capabilities, which just makes sense. There are a lot of pieces that just, it makes sense. It's done, far away, but there are so many things that can just be done here. And I think for us is we want to give the capabilities to sort of the UK to do that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Advanced Engineering Talks, a podcast created by the Advanced Engineering team. ATalks brings together some of the newest and most innovative minds in engineering and manufacturing to help better the future for our industry. We hope you enjoy the series.
Hello and welcome, everybody. Jeremy Whittingham here again, interviewing on behalf of Advanced Engineering. I'm once again delighted to bring you to another Advanced Engineering Talks podcast where innovation never sleeps. Now, like everyone else, I'm sure you've all been talking more and more about circularity, sustainable manufacturing. Today, my guest is already becoming a new force in this challenge. He is founder of startup Circular Manufacturing Innovators, Batchworks, Julien Visser. Julien, welcome to Advanced Engineering Talks. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jerry, for the invitation. And really excited to talk about circular manufacturing.
Great, great, great. Well, I'd like to kick off, actually, before we get too stuck into that as well. Just can you tell us a bit about your background and what brought you to where you are now in sustainable manufacturing?
So it's been a journey, I guess. It's been probably over 12 years now, back to my architecture school, which got graded in Belgium quite a while now. And it all started there while I was doing my thesis, which was around how digital manufacturing and digital fabrication can essentially bring back, local manufacturing, and how we can use, 3D print. So at the time it was across 3D printing, CNC machining and others, how that can bring back production where the demand is. I always believed that, you not necessarily need a trillions of parts and, made in one location. And so how can we use that sort of smart digital fabrication tools to allow this? And so that journey sort of started then, and then it's been quite a few years now, all sort of self-started and sort of a journey since then. And obviously Batchwork was born in 2018 to sort of bring that vision to life.
So I think you touched on there as well, sort of bringing, I liked your phrase there, bringing the sort of production to the demand, is that right? And I certainly think with, the way that post-COVID and all the other sort of geopolitical things that are going on, and also sustainability of sort of, transporting things huge distances, there's a sort of, tilt to coming back in more and reshoring and having things nearby. Is that sort of something that you feel as well then?
Yeah, 100%. I guess that's why maybe 5 years ago it wasn't the right time, and it was all about building those pieces together to make it work as a model. And I think having the COVIDs, all the sort of global climates, it's sort of pushing, there's no more arguments of like, well, now it's still ships from far away. The technology is getting better and better to be onshoring. And I think 90%, I was reading some of the latest sort of news, and, 90% of the UK manufacturers have, started, reshoring their activities. And I think there is a real drive, and I think every country wants to own back those manufacturing capabilities, which just makes sense. There are a lot of pieces that just, it makes sense. It's done, far away, but there are so many things that can just be done here. And I think for us is we want to give the capabilities to sort of the the UK to do that, and especially in the 3D printing and additive manufacturing world.
Yeah.
And and I think we've seen it. We've seen it through COVID. We did obviously, like many other companies, the NHS, you know, providing visors and other PPE to key workers. That was one of the projects we did. But you know, it was, you know, we've sort of identified all these pieces, and it was like, well, there's something we can do there, and it does require a lot of innovation. It does require a lot of technology and a lot of, you know, work for this to be done. And you know, one of the biggest barriers are skills gap. You know, so we can't just bring it back and it's just going to work. You know, there are skills gaps. There are, and I guess that's one of the main one. The digital aspect, making sure the platforms and the tech is there to support this reshoring as well, to make sure we are competitive and it works for everyone. So I guess we definitely have seen the drive, and we won few Innovate UK and government grants to sort of really push that forward, you know, in resource efficiency and CO2 emissions. So I think it's driving the, you know, that helps the reshoring, but that also helps the country to reduce their CO2 emissions, as well as bringing employment and all of those pieces together. Yeah. So I think it's a great push, and I think we need to keep pushing.
Absolutely, and I think you mentioned funding and government and so on. Did a lot of that come via Innovate UK? I think you've certainly worked with them. Is that right?
Yes. Overall, we won about six Innovate UK grant funding, different range, quite small, some more much bigger, over a million. And it's, they all, got a few of them from the Made Smarter stream.
Great.
And some others are more international collaboration or creative funds, so smaller pots. But what we've seen is really combining this reshoring with the resource efficiency, with the energy efficiency, and all of that sort of combined together as a great way for us to on our funding journey, because we are a startup, we're a small startup, so for us, you know, you've got different routes, and I think having that support is a huge. Huge for us, because it shows, you know, the commitment on that side from the government, and then so when we go out there raising, it helps the building IP, you know, in the UK. So
which is very important, and of course, you know, it's great that we're building that IP in the UK, and of course the UK has always been great at sort of IP rich, you know, ownership and invention 100%. And innovation, and we're world leading at that, as you know, and you know, we've got three of the top 10 universities as well, research and development, I think there's a general feeling that we could do somewhat better at kind of commercializing it you know, 100%. Moving it to the next stages. Would you agree?
I think 100%, and I think, you know, I think we all heard about the AI drive happening as well. So there's something to take on there, where we can combine those elements and come up with a very compelling, you know, interesting proposals that we can then export. So I think even those capabilities that we have, you know, as, you know, the UK on the AI front, on the digital front, on the manufacturing front, I think that's where, you know, the innovation makes sense, and that's where you can get, you know, compelling proposals to make the transition, as well as growing, you know, those capabilities. So I think it's a really interesting, powerful, you know, elements that can come together to fulfill those gaps, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think, you know, most of what we're talking about here, and perhaps most of what you're involved in, is relatively low volume manufacturing, you know, using additive manufacturing techniques, obviously, and so on.
Yeah.
Or do you think there'll be more and more sort of high volume, or will that a lot of that still have to be sort of, you know, made overseas?
Injection molded. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. So 3D printing has been, you know, over promising and probably under delivering for the last
few
years. I think in the sector of, you know, metal and sort of high end, I think it's been, you know, a fantastic journey. I think on we as Batchworks, we're focusing on FDM, so extrusion based system. And so the way we position it is really on the circular aspect. So we use only sort of waste streams and recycled material. I think we believe that's the best application of that technology. It's essentially to be able to be circular. I think there is probably the most underestimated piece on 3D printing and additive manufacturing is the sustainability and circular aspects. It's very easy to bring back the material, shred it, and re-extrude, which drive the cost down massively. So we see, in terms of volumes, what we've been building is obviously automation systems, so we can actually bring, you know, medium to sort of large volumes. So we make thousands of pieces per month. And really it's looking at, you know, we work with many companies that just don't need 100,000 or half a million of pieces like tomorrow. And so it really questions the whole supply chain, you know. And so the way we see it is, you know, there are ways to be faster and easier in bringing those products to market, and that's where we come in. And so, you know, when you look at, you know, there's a sort of a great analogy of the web, you know, 20 years ago, if you wanted to get a website done, it would cost you, you know, £20,000. The website wouldn't be necessarily that great, or have agency that would charge, you know, a huge amount of money to deliver those digital assets. And I think what we see now is there's a similar things happening now where just products are accessible to everyone. People can have, you know, creativity is, you know, everywhere, and people want to make their own product, and it's you know, businesses that will get access to those CAD system. You can model products much easier. And so I think the way we see it is, well, there's 3D printing and additive manufacturing is as a whole system. If you're able to include the ideation to the manufacturer, you can really squeeze those costs and that supply chain directly to bring products to markets. And so I think that's in terms of volumes, you know, it's a matter of just having more machines. You know, if they automated 24/7, the output is these just recycled plastic, like an injection molding tool would do. Obviously, injection molding have a really high accuracy, really high repeatability sort of rate, but, you know, it's not necessarily good for certain products that we're doing that doesn't need necessarily those specifications.
Right.
And so we see a whole range of application, for example, in retail and fixtures and fittings. So retail fixtures and fittings, they need, you know, a couple of thousands of pieces. They need to change them every 3 to 5 years when they rebrand their stores or refit their stores. So we can take the material back essentially and reprint things for their stores in different shapes and forms. And so that's where the circularity piece is super interesting, because you can really use the material back again and include it as a part of a business model, which will be really difficult in other type of manufacturing where the process is much more expensive, the value is less. Where here we have take back scheme and loops, which drive the material costs down, obviously, on the long term. So
really interesting. That's really interesting indeed. I really wanted to also get to your recent involvement in the children's headphones, which look really cool for one thing, but of course they were included by The Guardian in 2023 in their as one of their best designs and designers of 2023 initiative that they ran. I think it was chosen by the chief exec of the design council, wasn't it? The headphones that you worked on.
Minimal.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
And tell us a bit about how they came about.
Yes, so we've been working with the Dime Council on a few topics. Obviously, you know, we looking at, you know, repairability, recyclable, recycled material, you know, really bringing that into the consumer electronics sector, which is obviously the hardest to sort of tap into in general. So, you know, if you're making a pen pot that has less impact than, you know, a consumer electronics piece. And so we've been working with that sort of a spin out from Batchworks. So Kibu is a sort of B2C consumer electronics brand. And so we've been looking at what is the first products we should launch that would have, you know, an impact to the young generation. You know, they are the one coming, you know, after us, and they're the one that needs to be, you know, need to understand what climate change is. And I think the 2023 number one word, which was said by, I think, 5,000 children over 7 to 14 years old, it's the number one word is climate change. And the second word that came to their mind is war. And so we really need to, like, really shows that we need to really push, you know, products and systems to them, because first they're really keen, and also if we can make it, you know, playful and you know, which is the whole point of Kibu, is bringing that vision to the youngest. And then so Kibu, really what we're looking at is a world first sort of 3D printed headphones that is fully repairable, recyclable, and from recycled material. And so the idea is you can take it apart, you can switch with your friend, different colors, all made in the UK. We also working with a company to make the electronics soluble, with soluble boards, which is super interesting. And so it's really about taking this idea of a circular product into a right from the ideation stage into a consumer electronics product, and using additive manufacturing as the method to manufacture it, you know, at batch levels. And so we've been, you know, Design Council is all about, obviously, you know, circular economy, circular design, and how you know, design industry is 2 million people in the UK. It's one out of 20 workers in the UK. So the creative industry and design industry in the UK is absolutely huge. And I think Design Council is working on, you know, creating those tools and creating, you know, framework to embrace those circular principles. And so what they saw into Kibu is essentially being able to demonstrate this into a real product, which we'll be launching on the 9th of April on a crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter. So the idea is really, so they'll go to market really, really soon, which we're really excited about. And, you know, and you can take the whole electronics apart, you can check the jack components, you can really, it's fully repairable. And so for, it's a big thing. And then I think when you look at the implication, it's really thinking right from the drawing board, and you can't do it, you know, it just has to be thought through from the initial stages. So we're excited to Kibu to be the first doing this, and then obviously trying to bring it to adult. So we're not going Bluetooth and batteries, we're going very, very sort of low tech on the headphones to sort of lower the barriers to, like, bringing this to life. And then moving forward, we'll be adding more products to that family. But it's really, so we're really, really excited. Yeah. Obviously, we've got loads of press, including the Guardian. Yeah. So now it's about giving it to the people. And we're also working with the education sector, you know, see if that could be part of the DT programs. Because at the moment they use stuff, they buy it from China, right? So it's like, well, we could bring, those tech kits, you know, directly to made in the UK. So.
And that's the other thing that really, you know, stands out about it is I mean, obviously we've, you know, especially with kids, we've had, you know, the last post-war years of decades of, let's say, 40, 50 years of things becoming more and more disposable, non-repairable. And, yeah, and these chickens are coming home to roost, as they say. And getting that head into children now, that things, you know, can be and should be and can be economically viable to repair, is a great thing, and really is what it's all about. And I guess chimes with their climate change and environmental consciences as well. But and not only that, is with the skills gap and needing to engage people or children at quite a young age. Something like this and encouraging 100%. Them to rebuild it is fantastic. It's, and again, it fires their imagination, doesn't it? So, I mean, do you think, it seems to me that this is an example of something which I think could really catch on and probably should do.
I think it brings a new, I think in terms of talking about business model, I think the way then you see it is it creates a material almost as a currency. So, you know, or bring back 1 kilo of your old toys back to the school, and the school network could be part of that sort of circular network.
Yeah.
And suddenly, instead of getting toys, you get, you know, well, you're going to get 1 kilo of this material, and you can make anything you want, you know. And so then you make them more responsible on the value of, well, this toy that you have has X amount of material credit and it has value over time. And so it's really about incentivizing them to be like, those toys that you're buying, and the same for, you know, the schools, you know, have value over time. And so, and so if you bring them back, then we can recover the material, we can, and you can make new, you can use those material credits essentially to make new things. And so, you know, if you go to, you know, if you're doing a Halloween, for example, we see highly disposable, you know, things, then you can just make based on the material amounts that you have, and then we can recover the material. And so it really creates a renewed type of economy where, you know, you give them the flexibility to have a really interesting design, a really interesting toy, which is, you know, if you talk about sustainability, you would think, oh, it's wood or cardboard and very limited range. But if you open it to the realm of thermoplastic and open it to a digital platform where you have designers all around the globe that can select, you know, amazing toys or like headphones or anything, then, you know, you could think that, you know, maybe Lego or what is going to be those big toys company in 20 years, you know. And I think it's, if you look at, you know, on Christmas, you'd be like, oh, you know, I'd like to get this blue or this 10 kilos of material because I want to make this much of toys. And so you can really work on this sort of new type of economy where the material has value, and because it's so easy for us to recover, and the cost is really low. So, you know, if you look at the fashion industry, returns are a real pain because they don't know what to do with it, and it would cost a lot of money to dispose or recycle, where within our circular manufacturing and sort of using additive manufacturing as the methods, first, the waste is really low. It's made locally, and it is really easy to turn that thermoplastic back into raw material for us. And that's really, and that makes then the model, you know, working, because if that material can be used 3, 4, 5 times, then it's, you know, it's amazing. That's the vision.
Well, it seems to be, you know, turning into reality. But are there certain sectors where you are able to source, you know, this sort of sustainable recyclable material, and is it tricky to you know, prove their source? Is that an issue? Because I know it is in some people's experience.
So at the moment we source everything from the Netherlands, and the waste is from the Benelux region, so Belgium, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands. At the moment, there are, you know, the top countries that actually do recycling really well, I guess. And so at the moment, I remember loads of our raw material are like food boxes and the PLA, for example, which is like coffee lids and things like this.
Wow.
So I think it's really That's something that we don't have in the UK yet. So I think it's very easy to achieve. There are very few extrusion lines for material for additive manufacturing, very few recycling that focusing on that. But we're working with a partner in Cornwall called Fishy Filament, and he's developed a system to sustainably and consistently recycle fishing nets, for example. Fishing nets are a huge stream of waste, and he's developed a whole shredding, washing, pelletizing system that allows not only additive manufacturing but also injection molding sort of sector to use that material.
Because probably I think it is
100% nylon, and so those are high end, you know, high engineered sort of material, and so we can apply that system to any waste streams, right? So we're working with one of the biggest retailer in the UK, and you know they have so much plastic to recycle, and so if we start transitioning the way they fit their stores, then you know then we can have a partnership with them, and then in, you know, in the next 5 years, you know, we can then recover, and then there's a whole system that embrace this. But we can work, you know, with a lot of, you know, additive manufacturing has a higher tolerance in terms of weight, like material input, than injection molding. So which means we can lower tolerance, but meaning we can get waste streams that will be tricky to get in other manufacturing systems. And so we've done a pilot with Hackney Council, for example. We collected over months into 20 different coffee shops for every milk bottle lid. So, you know, I think every day a barista is going to throw away, you know, 20 coffee lids. Yeah. And so looking at calculation, if you take the numbers of coffee shops there's in London, there's probably a waste streams of, you know, 100 to 200 ton of just coffee lids per year. And that's just a small, you know, that's just a really realistic, you know, small stream where, you know, if every coffee shops will drop that lid into a specific bin instead of the general bin, then you can capture that waste straight away, easily clean it, shred it, and re-extrude it into products for you know, the Kibu headphones or anything else.
Absolutely.
So I think there are, and I think we've been proving all those bits of the circular manufacturing, and now we're in the phase of sort of scaling it and bringing the others the capabilities to do it. And so that's sort of where we're at. But we've identified all those technology, and now it's just need to be in scale and put on board, you know, the majority really.
Yeah. So is London, are we not doing that well? I mean, it sounds like it ought to be a simple thing to do, just that one thing of, like, you know, having a workflow of coffee.
Well, I think you need the system, right?
Yeah,
exactly. I think it's an exploration thing. I think it's you know, for example, the shredding system and the washing system is not necessarily, there are a couple in the UK, but it's, you know, it's not fully there yet. Extrusion lines, while it's manufacturing, there's only a few. And so I think we just need to bring sort of those pieces together as a very streamlined, simple system, which then we can just instantly tap into. And I think I think we've done that pilot in Hackney for a few months, 6 months, last a year and a half ago. And it was a very great pilot. And so we're on a journey of fundraising now to make those and scale those projects, you know. Part of ourselves and with a few partners.
You obviously, you mentioned, and we touched very briefly on skills and the skills gap. I mean, what do you think are going to be some of the biggest challenges for you, well, either as a company going forward or sustainable manufacturing in general? Again, we've touched on some of the conversations there, but is there anything else? I mean, is it going to be buy-in? Is it going to be skills? What do you think is your biggest hurdle and challenge?
Well, I think definitely the skills, and I think that's why we're developing our sort of our platform AI-driven, where some of this skills gap can be filled through AI. So we have quite a deep knowledge on design for additive manufacturing, and so we want to implement this through the platform to sort of help broader, a broader kind of, people to just use it and use that technology. Yeah. I think there are barriers in terms of the hardware as well. So software I've just mentioned on hardware. Yeah. But I think it's obviously adoption. You know, we had in conversation with policymakers as well. I think, we're putting into the circular economy because that's what everyone is pushing, which is for us, a big driver. And so I think it's, I guess some of the, definitely skills gap. Specialist staff is what you need at the moment to use 3D printing realistically, and that's the gap we're trying to fill. And in terms of barriers, obviously we're looking at there's a lot of new things in that, and so we are still in the seed stage, so we are backed by a lot of climate tech sort of venture capital, but we're pushing on that front. We're pushing on the hardware front as well, to sort of bring this new hardware to the market. And I think overall, as we know the reshoring process is difficult, raising of operational costs, concerned in supplier management, costs and all of that. The need of more staff, are going to be some of the barriers. But I think, when you look at the technology advancements on AI platforms and digitalization of factory and sort of data-driven production sites, is just going to be the future. So I think that's where the return on investment is coming, really.
There's a lot to do in terms of data acquisition and sort of analysis, gaining insights, that kind of thing. And as you say, a lot of the skills of the human capital in that, are
100%
are needed. And do you think that's difficult to find at the moment, or is it just a question of really working hard on trying to source those people, and they're out there?
I think they are up there, to be honest. I think we just need to build those tools to give, broader sort of audience to use it. I think the skills are out there. I think the UK has the skills to do that. Obviously, there will be a gap, in terms of numbers of people, and that's why we need to build those tools, right? So then more people can onboard those changes. So I think I think that's key, but absolutely. I do believe that the knowledge is there, but we need to use that knowledge to build those tools so it will be used by a broader audience, and really drive change and impact.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's great. Thanks for that, Julian. A great conversation. We're probably reaching the end of our time. Is there anything you'd like to leave us with, or in terms of what you wanted to mention as main priorities, or what, in general?
Thank you so much for welcoming us. I mean, at the show, sort of the innovators, that was really fantastic to sort of meet the crowd, and obviously inviting me on the podcast. For us, we've got, one of our largest Innovate UK that came to an end a few weeks ago. So we're going to start commercializing our CMAS, circular manufacturing service, sort of products, including hardware and software. So we're now going through a new fundraise. But we'll be also looking at pilot companies, so quite a very small tight group of 10 companies to sort of onboard our system and just have a really iteration feedback, and so we can then release more open features and onboard more people to it. So I think if there is anyone in the audience that want to reach out, so everyone can can reach out.
Yeah. Sounds exciting times, though, Julian, must say.
Yeah, exciting. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think combining, you know, engineering world with the design council world, I think it's all we all need to come together to bring this to work. I think that's the main piece.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we'll look. We'll carry on. Hopefully, being in touch, and we'll be watching with interest. We wish you and Batchworks continued success. It'll be interesting to see how things develop and hopefully see more of the examples of commercialization into the sectors we've been discussing. You know,
100%.
Okay, Julian. Well, thank you so much for your time and for joining us. And thanks to everybody who's listening. Thank you, folks. To listen to more of these podcasts, they are on the Advanced Engineering website at www.advancedengineeringuk.com. I'm Jeremy Whittingham signing off, and hopefully you'll join us for our next podcast. Thank you, everybody, and take care.